Merkle Media.
I guess it's time to go back in time.
Are you telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Time is but a stubborn illusion.
I have a lot of memories of the past.
People are time traveling within themselves.
Time travel is possible.
Merkle Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow his head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg. And I look over and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reached my hand into this bush and I touch air. Couldn't breathe and I couldn't move because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Okay, I'm reloaded.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to The Confessionals. I'm your host, Tony Merkle. Thanks for being here. If you have a crazy, wild experience you want to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com. Hit the contact section and you can reach me that way as well. Either way works for me, just get a hold of me. If you want to hear more shows on a weekly basis, go to theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the join button and become a member. Members get access to exclusive member shows released every Thursday on the Castos app and the website. Plus you get Tuesday show ad-free listening and access to overtime episodes just like today's episode. Today's episode is an overtime show, and I am very excited about letting you guys hear what I have in store for you today. The public show is actually a little shorter than I normally put out, but that's because I really thought that this story was so good on its own. It was a standalone. It didn't need any salt or pepper to it to make it spicy. So I wanted to let it stand alone. And little did I know that this first hour segment was not going to be the first time our guest Chris encountered a skinwalker. You see, he is stationed right now on a military base where he looks out at night over the property on the west side. And he encountered a skinwalker one night and he thought, and I thought it might have been his first time experiencing a skinwalker. Well, it turns out in the overtime we explore more, and it sounds like when he was younger, he had another skinwalker experience, which might be even more crazy than the one you're about to hear. And it was kind of jaw-dropping. So anyways, but that said, let's get to Chris and this jaw-dropping skinwalker encounter he had on a military base one night while he was patrolling. And then in the overtime, we're going to get into a lot more stuff, including his first time encountering a skinwalker, which literally might be more terrifying than what you're about to hear right now. All right, today we got Chris on the show. Chris, what's going on, brother?
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going. So listen, first of all, thanks for coming on the show, man. I don't know if you even listen to the show. I know you were recommended to me by somebody else, so I don't know how much you know of what you're getting into today, but you're in for a ride, my friend. So listen, you reached out to... I'm not sure if I can say his name publicly. I don't know if he's going by a fake name. You reached out to a mutual person of that's connected to us. And you shared your experience with a skinwalker. And as we were just talking here before we hit record, you did say that you kind of, you're that person in the family that has weird things happening a lot to you. So what we're going to do is we're going to go into the skinwalker account first, and then we're going to talk about the other things. And just to give the audience a million foot overview, we're going to do the skinwalker, and then we're going to talk about grandparents' cattle ranch and some weird things that may have not have been coyotes. The audience already is kind of on the edge of their seat, cause they're like, oh yeah, I dig it. Cause he's definitely going down the dog man route. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, weird stuff in the mountains, your parents' house in Illinois, and just, you know, I guess you have some weird things that happen in the woods, some creepy stuff. So, I'm interested in just having conversation with you, man. And, we're going to start out with the skinwalker story. So, you're in the military.
Yes.
And, from what I understand, this happened. Did it happen on base?
Yes, it happened on base. It was in the winter of 2020.
Okay. So we're talking the winter of 2020. Setting the stage here, you're on base. I want you to kind of lay the groundwork. Okay. So what were you doing? Where were you? If you can share the base, as much detail as possible about this experience of seeing a skinwalker on base. That's incredible.
Okay, so I'll preface by saying too, I'm also Native American.
Okay. Enough said.
Yeah, I'm Navajo, I'm a Comanche, which is from both sides of my parents, so that's pretty cool. But at that time, I was working with the military police on Quantico on West Side. I was working nights, so our schedules on nights go from about 8 o'clock at night to about 6-7 o'clock in the morning. Depends on what you run into for your reports, how early you have to come for pre-brief and stuff like that. So it was one of the colder nights out here in Virginia, and clear sky. Moon was one of the half illuminated moons, so you can kind of see around, but once you get into thickets or anywhere kind of behind a building, the illumination kind of drops down. There wasn't any snow on the ground at this time. There's a little bit of snow on the ground at this point. Leaves are already off the trees. So it's kind of the transition phase from fall into winter. Anybody who's an outdoorsman kind of knows what I'm talking about, or just in general. And so I drive from my girlfriend's parents' house to Quantico. It's around 7-8 o'clock at night. Go into pre-brief. So just kind of sit down, get all my junior marines settled and everything, and kind of get to know what we're going to be doing for the night, if anything came up, any new direction, any stuff like that. And after that, we all kick out. I take my when it comes to posting marines, we'll take one vehicle to post a different group at each gate. And on that night, I was the West Side unit, and where there's only one West Side unit to cover all of West Side. If you're familiar with Quantico, there's Main Side, which is going to be where all your hub, Crossroads, and Marine Corps stuff is going to be. So McWill, McCog, McKessage, McKessage is on West Side, but headquarters of Marine Corps, everything that's main Quantico is going to be on Main Side. And then everything that's the training for TBS, OCS, McKessage is going to be all on West Side. It's also where the FBI and DEA are. It's a huge expanse, actually. I've hunted it pretty heavily, and it would take, I would say, at least 3 or 4 hours, maybe even 5, traveling by a vehicle on the back roads to see the entire portion of the base. It's just that massive, and I cannot stress enough how big this place is. It's big enough to fit 3 different lakes, and almost, I think it's 1 million acres of woodland. Wow. Out there. Yeah, it's a ton of stuff. So you'll have lieutenants out there and McKessage students always getting lost. And anyway, I digress. I'm going off on a tangent. But so I go, I post my Marines. I take them to the main gate, and I bring my other Marines back. And from there, I usually do the rest of my load up, because at that time, I don't really grab my long gun or anything like that. So I came back. I got my shotgun. I got my patrol rifle, because unlike most people, I usually carried both, just because, you never know. I might be paranoid or whatever you call it, but
It can't hurt to over prepare.
Yeah, it cannot. You never want to be stuck in a situation where you want to, you know, end a threat at 100 yards when you only got a shotgun on you. But anyway, so at this point, I mean, I'm a pretty big hunter myself. I'm a huge outdoorsman, not to be the stereotypical like deadly native in the woods. But yeah, so I've grown up hunting, I've grown up fishing, I've grown up foraging. I ran around the desert as a kid a ton. I ran around the Midwestern woods a ton as a kid too, and you know what woods were left besides corn. So I'd consider myself a pretty familiar outdoorsman. I try to camp here and there and try to backpack when I can. I'm actually probably going to go up to the Shenandoahs in this next couple weeks. But so I'm not a stranger to the woods. I'm not a stranger to wildlife or anything. So at this time, it's the middle of deer season, and I've got trail cameras posted on all over Westside on like the spots that I hunt at. And it's just kind of like a side thing for me. It's not really for work or anything, just because what are you going to do for 10 hours in the middle of the night, you know, like on Quantico where the average rank is a major. So there's really not a lot of stuff going on for anybody in like military police besides like an alarm call here and there, which most of the time is unfounded or it's a faulty wire. So you got to pretty much make your own entertainment. And if you're not pulling cars at the gate for, you know, having an out headlight or stuff like that, which I never liked to do because I'm not a fan of screwing Marines over. Yeah. So I would just, at that time, I'd like run around West Side, just kind of see if I could see where the game trails were, if there were deer or like turkey feeding anywhere. So I had these group of trail cams up on kind of like the northwest side of base. So I'm coming into West Side. You go up this main road called MCB3, right? And it goes pretty much cuts the entire like left and right side of base in half. So on the left side, there's like ponds and like training areas that aren't really ranges. And on the right side, it's a bunch of ranges. And above it, there's like a power line that kind of cuts around all the base. And in between that, in this little basin, there's kind of these two hills that were a little bit taller than the rest of the topography over there that I found a bunch of game trails in, and I harvested deer there earlier in the year. And I was hoping to get more because I was keep getting pictures of that, coyotes and like foxes and turkey all around there. So I on this particular night, I pulled a couple traffic stops for speeding, and there's really nothing going on that side. So I decided to kind of like pack up and drive out there. And on the road out there, I'd say it's about 30 or 40 minutes on the main road. And then you turn off onto this dirt road that goes almost the entirety of the base. And there's a bunch of offshoots from there. And I'd say that's another 20, 30 minutes. And then from where I was going, I'd say it's about an hour and 20 minutes from like really anybody. Unless there's like somebody out there doing night exercises, which there weren't at the time, because they try to like coincide it with hunting season and stuff to just avoid chance encounters and accidents and stuff like that. So, and also on the side of base, comms, like our radios, usually suck really, really bad. And like most of the time you have to use your phone, and some of that times your phone doesn't even work. So getting out to anything out there is kind of, I'd say, a little bit dangerous. You can always hit your emergency button and people kind of like geolocate where you are, but it's kind of a hit or miss. But anyway, I'd say it's about 1 or 2 in the morning at this time, where I finally get to this little kind of creek area. I parked my patrol car right next to the area, like right where the gravel road stops. And it's about, I'm going to say about 10, 20, 30 minute walk there, depending on how much moonlight there is. And on this night, there's really not enough moonlight to really cut through the trees. So it took me a good half an hour to get where I wanted to go. And so I got in my truck. I didn't grab any of my long guns or anything because I didn't want the game warden thinking I was poaching or anything like that, you know, just trying to be as like chill and low key as possible. So I just grabbed my laptop and I, kind of started off into the woods. I usually let my night vision adjust, but it was too dark. So I kind of cranked out the Surefire and kind of like quietly made my way up to where I had my trail cams in this tree stand that I put up. So I finally get to the tree stand. And right where I'm looking at is, if you can imagine it, I'm about 30 feet up in a tree. And right in front of me, there is a hill on one side and a hill on another side. And my back is towards another hill. So it's kind of like this little like triangle thing, if you will, that gets dissected by a creek in the front and a creek to the side. And by a creek, I mean, it's no bigger than like the width of an iPhone. And on one side, you've got a bunch of brambles. And on the other side, you've got a huge thicket of oaks and bushes. And like, it gets thicker and thicker and thicker the more you go. And like right in the middle of it, there's a game trail that I was watching. And I had the trail camera about, I'd say, 15, 20 yards out to the right, kind of shooting in towards me, like dissecting the game trail. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know if I painted a pretty good picture there or not. But so that's where I would always just kind of like, even like when I was off of work, I'd go over there and I just would pull the SIM card out of my trail cam, and I'd pop into my laptop and I just climb up to into the tree, stand and just kind of sit there. And I crack up on my laptop, and I'm just kind of going through pictures, like the average, like what, like Northern Virginia wildlife, you know, like turkey, deer, coyote, foxes, like kind of like whatever you're going to see on a game trail usually. And I'm sitting there for about, I'd say about 20, 30 minutes, just kind of passing time, just looking through them. And I start to hear off on the left side, and mind you, like the woods aren't really quiet at night, right? They're full of owls, like voles running around and stuff like that. Like you can hear stuff, and deer are usually active then. But it takes a while for my hearing to notice it, just because I was so distracted on my laptop, and I just noticed like everything starts to kind of go quiet, and which is kind of odd. So I'm like trying to listen in and see what's going on, because there's black bears on that side of Quantico, like not huge black bears, but there's been a couple that have come towards TBS bivouacs and gates and stuff like that, but nothing really to worry about. And so that's what I'm thinking, because a coyote or a fox really isn't going to make things go quiet. It's usually going to be a bigger predator, like a person or like a bear. That's pretty much the only thing that's really in those woods. Like, I don't know if mountain lions have been returned to this part, but I doubt it. So I try to like listen in, and I'm kind of on the left side, about, I'd say about 50, 60 yards. I can kind of hear what sounds like a person walking through the woods. And, which really isn't weird at that time of night, because, you know, TBS, OCS, McKessage is always doing stuff on the west side. So the likelihood of somebody lost on night land nav, and where I was sitting, it was right in the middle of one of the night land nav courses. So it's not really like, oh no, like, why is there a person out here? It's just kind of like, whatever. So in my mind, thinking just so I could help this person, because they were like kind of way off course, it was also to mess with them. I like shut my laptop off. I kind of quieted myself down so I can be like, oh, I can scare this boot tenant, you know, like give him a little fright and then kind of help him back out the track. And, the weird thing to me was, I don't know if you've ever like hunted like a bobcat or any type of cat, like a mountain lion or whatever, but if you ever have a decoy, they'll circle, right? Circle and circle and circle, and like kind of check out what it is before they pop into the area to go grab it or, you know, do whatever with it. This is like a post thought. I didn't even think about this until later. And that kind of was kind of a pucker moment, if, you know, just catch my drift. But so I hear like the gentle like crushing of like leaves and stuff go from like right to the left hand side of me to about my 11 to my 12, back to my 10, and then I hear it again over my 2 o'clock, and just kind of keeps doing that for about like 45 minutes to like an hour. And I'm just like sitting here thinking like, oh, that's, you know, it's not weird. I mean, at some point I'm just going to get bored and call out to this person and be like, yo, what are you doing? And then it finally kind of, the sound crosses back over the creek and stops, I'd say about 25 yards to my left in that thick bramble of old growth with berry bushes in it, and it just kind of stops there. I was like, okay, whatever. They're probably just taking a break or whatever. And at that point, you ever get the feeling that like something's not wrong, like not right? Like you get like, it's that primal feeling, like the hair stand on the back of your neck, like when you're a kid, like grabbing something from the fridge in the middle of the night and you turn off the lights and run up the stairs and you just feel something trying to grab at you.
Yeah.
I think that's the best analogy I can think of. Cause that's what I started feeling, like all the hairs on the back of my neck just start prickling, like the hairs on my arm, like I start getting goosebumps. And which is weird to me, cause like, there's not a lot of times or not a lot of things that really freak me out in the woods. Like I said, I'm a pretty experienced, you know, outdoorsman. I've, you know, hunted everywhere from the west to the east coast. And like that feeling you get is like when you're being stalked by a mountain lion, because mountain lions are quiet and they're, you know, you get that feeling right before they are going to pounce or kind of make their presence known. And so I'm kind of sitting there and I'm just like, pardon the French, but I'm like, what the F, you know, like what's wrong with me? Like, I don't understand what's the issue. So I just kind of sit there and just kind of wait and listen. And the thing that really threw me off is because I swear this sounded like a person. It sounded like, because you hear people walking through the woods. People are not quiet. They don't know how to walk through the woods unless you're like barefoot and you're like a paleo civilization. Like 99% of modern humans cannot walk through the woods quietly. And I started to see this eye shine kind of coming through. And that kind of threw me off because like humans really don't have a lot of eye shine unless you're taking a picture or whatever. It's mostly like predatory animals and like some herbivores like deer and stuff that their retinas will glow anytime like they have a backdrop of light, like even the moon. So I'm like starting to get uneasy and I look over and it starts to walk more closely into view and it turns out to be a deer. It's a nice deer too, which is kind of taking me off because I was like, oh great, now I'm gonna have to sit in here for another 2 hours so I don't scare it off, so it'll come back in the morning when I got off work and pop back up here. And my brain kind of like failed to realize that, why did it sound like that, why did it sound like walking like that when it's a deer? But the only thing I was worried about was this. And it started to come slowly into view, and I'd say it probably entered from about like 20 yards away on my left hand side. And mind you, I'm like 30 feet up in the air, so I'm kind of, it's a little bit distance from me, and it starts to come in kind of close to me at a diagonal pace. So it's about 15 yards away from me. And it just kind of like looks around a little bit. And this feeling of dread just kind of starts creeping back. Like after the surprise, it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, to the point where I remember like having to hold my hands down against my laptop to stop them from shaking for some reason. And like I said, that's what, like, I don't mean to laugh, but that's like what, that's like the thing that really freaked me out. Cause like, I don't do that. I'm a pretty calm, collected individual, I'd say. And, this thing crosses that little creek right onto the opposite side where that conglomeration of old growth oaks is, and it stands up on its hind legs and it just starts beating the living shit out of its own skull. Like, sorry, I'm just getting like, you know, a little freaked out again. Just beating it over and over and over, and I can hear like each like thump of the head, and like with each hit you can hear like the bone and the antler breaking. And I'm like sitting this. Sorry, that was my dog. If you heard that, scared me a little bit.
It's okay.
Just keeps hitting over and over and over until its like face is a mess of crushed up bone and like brain. And this thing's still standing on two legs. And like my first thought later was, chronic wasting disease. Like it's a common prion in deer around the area, but it wouldn't make it, you know, stand up on its hind legs, you know, and it wouldn't make it do that. And at the point where there's no way this deer could have been still standing or even alive. Its eyeball is like kind of like dangling out there, just like with this dead look. And this thing looks up, this thing stands and gets up from what it was doing and just kind of looks at me. And I felt my stomach like hit the floor. Like I could feel like everything, like the blood in me drain. And as clear as I'm hearing you, man, I hear someone or something say, "I know you're there." And at that point, all I remember doing is just saying, "Fuck." Like I just started, pardon the French, but I just remember saying it over and over and over and over. And as quick as it happened, this thing drops back down on its hooves or whatever, and just starts to gleefully trot away. And what felt like, I'd say about like 6 or 7 hours, but it was probably about 10 minutes. I'm sitting there just shaking, like not even having an ability to like grab my sidearm or anything like that. Like I was freaking terrified. Like I didn't know if it was because I was dreaming, because I was tired and it was on nights and I was working a day job at the same time, but I'd just taken a bunch of energy drinks and I was wide awake. So I'm sitting there trying to reason myself with it. I'm like, you're crazy. Like, just don't worry about it. And whenever I can hear kind of like the sound come back to the woods, like I have never gotten out of a tree stand as fast as I did. It's one of the ones that like you nail on top and you like climb up the little ladder on the side. And I don't even think I touched the last 20 rungs. Cause I just jumped down and I didn't even grab my laptop. I just booked it straight back to the car. And I probably peeled out of there going about 90 miles an hour on that dirt road, trying to get back to the gas station on base. And I just, for the rest of the night, I just kind of sat in that parking lot with the lights on and kind of my shotgun with one in the chamber, just kind of chilling. I kind of like minding my own business because I was like, I don't want to mess with it. And after the end of my shift, I came back and I was downloading to go home. I'm an NCO, so like they really didn't keep me afterwards to clean up or anything. So I would just download and go home. And I'm downloading, like I'm pulling all my stuff out and giving it back to the armory. And my lieutenant comes up and he's like, "Hey man, you doing all right?" I was like, yeah, why?" He's like, "Dog, you look white. Like you look terrified." I'm like, "Oh, I'm fine. He's like, "You sure?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine. Don't worry about it." And from there, it was just kind of like on my mind for like the rest of, like I'd say the next couple months, because I always would volunteer to go patrol West Side because I loved doing that. I love being out in the woods and kind of like doing stuff like that. And a couple of the people I worked with were like, "Hey, what's up, man? You don't want to be on West Side anymore?" I'm like, "No, I'm all right. I'll stay to Main Side. I'll drive around the PX all night. It's no big deal." But yeah, I would say that's probably the most open, like in my face, I don't want to say paranormal, but like odd experiences I've had.
Yeah, odd. that's one way to describe it. Holy cow. Let me ask you, did you ever tell anybody about this? I mean, on base or anything? Have you ever opened up to anybody about this?
The only person I've kind of like really told about it was my girlfriend. She knows about it. And Tales from the Grid Square, shout out to him on Instagram. I told him because I saw his page about asking military members for like their experiences and stuff, and I was like, "Oh, okay, I'll give this a shot." And the thing that kind of made me come to you was like the response I got from everybody there. It kind of was like, "Oh, hey, this is good." And you know, being Native American myself, and not a lot of people having like an insight into the culture and into like how we like believe in things or do things, I thought it would be a good opportunity to like come on here and kind of like share it more. So yeah, aside from them before that, I haven't really told anybody.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, it's something, how do you even start that conversation with people? You know, they're like, what, you don't want to go to Westside? And you're just like,
yeah,
you know, I lost my appetite for the woods.
Yeah. So I went back, I'd say about a month later in the day, with one of my friends. We went squirrel hunting, and I used squirrel hunting kind of like as a cover, and I didn't tell him why. And he's like, cause usually when squirrel hunting, you're like stopping and going. And I was just kind of booking it back to this place because I needed to grab my laptop and my trail camera, cause I wasn't going to lose like $2,000, you know? And, we finally crest the back hill to where the backside where my tree stand was, and it's quiet again. And my buddy goes, "That's weird." And I'm like, "Why? I'm like, what's weird?" And he's like, "Well," and my buddy's a scout sniper, so he's really quiet in the woods. That like that man can sneak up on pretty much anything. And I'd say I'm pretty quiet too, so usually you can still hear stuff while we're going through. But we didn't hear anything. And he's like, "Why is your stuff here?" So I ran up and I grabbed my laptop and I grabbed my trail camera, and I went to go look at the tree that I remember being at. And the thing that kind of like really like solidified that I wasn't just tripping or tired was that the tree actually had like impact marks on it, and there was like dried blood on it and like bone shards at the base of it. And like I couldn't look at my face, but I saw his face when I turned around, and like by his expression, he could probably see the color drain from my face. And I was like, "Yeah, let's get out of here." And he's like, "Okay." And I'd say the weirdest thing was like after snows and a bunch of stuff like that is my laptop looked untouched. Like there wasn't any like growth on it. It still turned on fine. It was still charged. So
that was a question that I was going to ask you for clarification. So you left your laptop out there for about a month.
Yeah.
So when you left that night, you did you forget it, or you were just like, "I'm leaving everything here. I'm just getting out of here and running."
It was kind of like a drop it, and it was just kind of a book it moment. Like if I had anything else with me, I probably would have left it too. So yeah, I just
you leave it out there for a month, and it seemed like it was left there the day before.
Yeah, that's I didn't really think of it as odd until I thought about it later. So after the nerves calm down, because I mean, like I've had this for a while, but it doesn't really look like it was left out.
Is that a laptop?
Yep, it's the exact laptop. It doesn't look like it was left out in the woods or anything. Like none of the stickers on it are like faded off or washed out. So yeah, I don't know. That was it's kind of like a side weird thing. I don't know.
Did it rain and snow or anything? What was the weather?
It was snowing pretty heavily for that last month. So
you, I mean, going out there, you were expecting to have a ruined laptop.
Yeah, 100%.
That's interesting. I find that very interesting.
Yeah, that's the thing that kind of that's just adding that into the rest of the cocktail of like weird crap. It's just a little more unsettling, I would say.
Oh. Absolutely. Yeah. It's well, we can dissect that at some point, I guess. But, so I had, done an interview years ago, episode 136, and I'm approaching 500 now. So, it's been a long time, but, I had a guy on talking about how him and his buddies went on a property that they weren't supposed to be on. I believe it was in Oregon, and, it's like there are signs saying no trespassing. And they go anyways, and there was a lot of weird things that happened that night. And that's why like it kind of, the laptop thing kind of sticks out to me in the sense that, so they basically get chased out of there by upright running deer. Now they were in a car, and these things were running alongside their car.
I think I listened to that episode of yours once I found out you had a podcast. I kind of like deep dived into your stuff.
Okay.
So
yeah, I mean that one, like when you were telling your story, that kind of stuck out in my head. But now with this laptop thing, if you recall from that story, they came across a house where all the furniture was on the ceiling. And that was a very peculiar thing. And maybe I don't even remember how we handled that during the interview. I probably could have asked more questions about that, but I'm just like, get to the upright walking deer part, man. And, you know, but it's interesting because both of you had experiences where there was upright walking slash running deer, but there was also inanimate objects involved in the story that did something peculiar. So that this house had furniture that was on the ceiling, like somebody just nailed it to the ceiling. And that's odd and bizarre, but then your laptop seems like it's been untouched and almost like it's gone into this other state of existence. And this is partly because of what I've been digging into recently myself. But I will say this, it really makes me wonder. You're talking to somebody who believes that there's an alternate universe, and I do believe that there are things that come through. And I have lots of operating theories on how this all works, but I do wonder if at times when people have these experiences like you did, that this bizarre experience didn't happen because something came into your space, but somehow you slipped into something else's space. And so things don't operate the same in these other existences than they would in the reality that we would come to be comfortable with. I don't know if that's a loaded thing for you. I don't know if you want to end the interview now because you think I'm crazy.
it kind of makes sense because there's a lot of Paleo-American and like Amerindian cultures that I'm not familiar with any of mine, like Navajo or Comanche believe in it, but I know there's a bunch like Algonquin and all the other Native American tribes who experience like Wendigos and stuff. Kind of like believe the same thing from what I read. But the only thing that threw me off with not thinking it was a skinwalker is because, I mean, one, everything I've learned as a kid growing up, because my grandpa's like full Navajo. And, is that like they usually take on the form of predators like coyotes or foxes or something that's a trickster. That's why in the culture you'll really never see anybody wearing coyote skin or anything like that, or pelts. It's always like sheepskin or whatever, or like clothing that's been handmade, just because of the belief in that. And I mean, it's out of the geographical range too, you know, so that's what threw me off too. But I mean, when it comes like the house or whatever they found, like Quantico's honestly on West Side is pretty creepy. Like there's abandoned cemeteries dating back to like the Revolutionary War period and before, and like abandoned house structures and stuff like that. And you always get those like weird, creepy vibes around it. Like there's even, this is from later, it's from like the 70s, but there's even like a Vietnam village that they used to train with out there that's like all dilapidated and stuff that just gives you kind of like eerie vibes out there too. So I think that'd make more sense of an explanation than a skinwalker explanation, but yeah.
So a couple things. One, I was just in Utah 2 months ago, and I got to talking with a lot of natives out there on the reservation, and they told me that, you know, skinwalkers can transform into horses. There's a lot of different things they can transform into. And that kind of caught me off guard because I came out with my own preconceived ideas, notions, and understandings. And here I am talking to people who've been dealing with these things and like, no, this is actually what happens, you know?
The freaky thing about it is like learning about it as a kid or whatever, like going into it within the culture, is that it's not really seen as something that's paranormal or out of the normal. It's just seen as a fact of life. It's just as real as like, you know, your flock of sheep. Like I have people in my family that I've recently reconnected with because of 23andMe, because I took a DNA test, and because we're so far removed from like the whole reservation and stuff. Like I kind of grew up really, really white and nice. Is that like my cousins, like a couple of their family, my family members legitimately believe they've just been cursed by a skinwalker and that they're just literally there. And it's not like paranormal. It's not whatever. It's just a fact of life, the way they talk about it. And I was kind of thrown off by that too. So,
it's like a state of existence, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I'm pretty sure I can say this part. I have to be guarded with how much I talk about, because we shot a film out there and it's not out yet. But we went out there on the whole Skinwalker Ranch topic, and, we didn't go to Skinwalker Ranch. We were on the property that butts up against it. And, our whole thing was to go and, investigate the area around the ranch to show people that it's not just the ranch, but it's all of this stuff. It's the whole area. And one thing that we picked up though, was that these people out there, this is not anything unusual for them. This is not anything paranormal. This is just the way it's always been. And the reason why Skinwalker Ranch has this stigma to it is not because it's special to anything else. It's just that in the 90s, I think it was the mid 90s, the Shermans bought the ranch and they were the first white people to own that property. And so they're experiencing all this crazy stuff and they're blowing it up. And so the world then focuses in on it and they're like, oh, the ranch. And it's like, no. It's not the ranch. It's this whole area, you know? It's the norm.
If you look into like I'm such a nerd when it comes to history and like my culture, because I grew up Mexican and Native American mainly, just because like, you know, both cultures that are very superstitious, I'd say. And, just that area where I grew up and that area in Arizona, it's just such like ancient areas with so much history. I don't know if you know about the Anasazi and like all the believed to be pre Amerindian peoples, like before the Native Americans came, that existed, like inhabited that place. And it's, I feel like something with that much culture and that much history and that much like human emotion, like I'm probably going to sound like a complete hippie and like out of my mind, but I feel like when a place has energy, whether it's from like an animal or people, it's like things are attracted to it. So I believe like all the energy and like all the pain, suffering, happiness, like whatever emotions like and experiences happen in that place, just because of the history of it, it just things are drawn to it. And I think the same thing about most of the Southwest. That's why it's like hauntingly beautiful, but you'll notice like a lot of people who aren't really in the culture close with like the outdoors really like to venture out into it. Yeah,
that makes sense. Let's go back to your experience. This thing comes through. I forget how you said it, but it basically comes into view, and you at first were seeing the eye shine, and it's walking, and then you see it stand up on its hind legs. It does what it does to the tree. When it goes away. It went back down on all four and just kind of walked away like a normal deer then?
Yeah, it just walked away like a normal deer with most of its head missing.
That's
because if you think about it, from what I saw, with how much the brain was destroyed, like motor function should not have been that good, you know?
So how do you reconcile that whole experience then? When it comes to what you saw, let's forget labels, you know, do you think that was an actual deer that did something crazy? Or do you think that maybe it could have been a possessed deer? Or do you think this was something completely different representing, like creating the image of a deer for you to see? It knew you were there. It said it.
So I've talked to a couple people, after the fact of, kind of like sharing it with that one Instagram account, and reconciling it, I'd say it's a bit rough, because at the time I was going through like a dissolution of a marriage, a bunch of other stuff. I was like kind of like pretty deep into alcoholism and stuff like that, so I was like really at a pivoting point in my life, and a couple people within the culture were like, well man, like there's an option that it could be like one of your ancestors trying to show you the significance of like you, like visualizing like the death of the previous you or whatever. But, I would say that after it, I kind of started to become more spiritual, so to speak. A couple of things in my life started to turn around, and I really focused on the things that mattered. I'd like drop the alcohol, like kind of like came to terms with a bunch of stuff. And being Mexican, I grew up in the Catholic Church my entire life, and I'm never going to dig on anybody's religion, but I never really fit into it. I never really liked it. I never really like followed the beliefs. Like, I was always in trouble in religion class because I was always calling people out for stuff. Which in like a Mexican private school that's like Catholic wasn't that great. But from there, I kind of broadened my horizons into being more spiritual and then like the Native American church and kind of like going more into my history. And I think part of it was something trying to communicate with me on a scale like that, because unless there's like a bunch of creepy things out in like existence in the wild that just enjoy and get a kick out of scaring the crap out of humans, you know, like maybe they do, maybe they don't, but I just kind of thought it was like a sign to stop being a bad person, if that's the Reader's Digest version. And I just kind of thought about it, but I pushed it deep down because, you know, being in the military, like a lot of stuff like that, and even more intense stuff like that you deal with at home, you just kind of push down because like you don't want to take away from the mission or take away from your guys. And, you know, if I come around, you know, where I work saying, yeah, I saw a deer on two legs, like pretty much like beat its head into a tree, you know, like my credibility, especially in law enforcement and stuff like that, is just going to go down the drain. So I just kind of internalize it, I guess, and try to make the best of it.
Yeah. So it sounds like, to me, it sounds like you're viewing this whole thing almost like a spiritual experience for you on a personal level, at least in hindsight. It's kind of like, I don't know what this ritual is, but I've seen it done where people almost take like their baggage in life, like their alcoholism or their bad relationships, and they write it down on a piece of paper and they put it in a jar and then they smash that jar and it's just, you know, it's gone, it's done, you know? It's almost in a weird, creepy, escalated sense, kind of like how that worked for you, where like you were in a really bad spot in life. You had a lot of bad things going on, and that deer destroying its skull was like that transition. That's weird. Yeah, weird.
I mean, I'd say most things in my life have been done intensely. I'm a pretty intense person. You can ask anybody, like whatever I do, I'm intensely into it. So I think it took something just as intense as my personality to kind of snap me out of it. Cause you know, therapy wasn't really working. The whole Alcoholics Anonymous thing was stupid. Cause when you're doing it on base, it's kind of like, dog, everybody's an alcoholic. It's just how much of an alcoholic makes you an actual alcoholic in the Marines. You know what I
mean? Oh man. Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, yeah, that's interesting. Oh man. So you went back that one time, you got your gear, you head out of there. Have you gone back since for hunting or anything like that?
I hunt on a complete opposite side of base now, even though that there's great deer and turkey hunting over there. I just kind of completely avoid it because I'm like, you know what? I'm okay. I'm okay in life. Things are starting to work out. So, I mean, I don't need another like spiritual awakening. I don't want to run into anything else. Because if it's not that, it's just something that was just straight up hunting me. Because if you've heard more of like Skinwalker and like Wendigo lore, like once something like finds you, it attaches to you and it'll like hunt you. And I mean, I'm a big fan of being a predator in the woods. I'm not a big fan of being prey, you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I'm also, I wouldn't say I'm very, I wouldn't call myself a, you know, believer in like the paranormal and supernatural, so to speak, but I'm also not like a denier. I like things in front of me for proof, but I'm not going to negate something that I've never seen, you know? So like it's having like the logical sense of me and then the Native American spiritual Mexican side of me. It's like, come on, like what? Like I'm pretty torn.
There's two different Chris's in your head.
Yeah, there is.
So I have a feeling the answer would be no, but I got to ask. Do you think, well, first of all, would you, but do you think it's even, would you be able to go back and get a picture of that tree that was all marked up with that deer's skull smashing against it?
Yeah, I probably could.
I feel uncomfortable asking you that because of what you just shared.
I mean, it's been so long. It's been like almost 2 years now. So, I mean, I'm kind of calm, you know, I've got a I can borrow one of my buddy's lever actions in like 45-70. So, I mean, if at the point, if I shoot something that I see scary with that and it doesn't go down, it's like, I'm screwed anyway. So, you know,
yeah,
why not?
I mean, listen, if you can find that tree again, and if the markings are still visible, I don't know what 2 years of weathering does and stuff, but, I would love to see it and all that. I feel bad even asking you to do that just because, like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, no worries. I think it'll be good for me, you know, just come to terms with something and kind of like facing it, you know, at face value, I guess.
You know, if you're going to go out there, you should do it right. So, when you're out there, why don't you bring like a handheld shovel and see if you can find any of that bone? I don't know if you'd want to take that with you, but I'll send you my address and you can mail it to me. I'd love to have that.
No 100% promises, but I will try to gain the testicular fortitude to get over there and do it sometime this hunting season.
Yeah. I mean, let me know how it turns out. And I mean, shoot, if this wasn't on a base, I'd be like, I'll be up there next week with you if you want. Like, I'll come with you, but I don't think I'm allowed to hang out on base.
I can always sponsor you, man.
What does that mean?
Like, I can always bring you on base, being a military member myself.
Just as like a visitor?
Yeah, just as a visitor. You don't need to sign up or anything. I'll just vouch for you.
Oh, shoot, dude. Like, all right, so listen. We'll talk about it off air stuff, see if we can figure out something, because I wouldn't mind going to the location. I mean, that'd be kind of trippy for me to experience.
Heck, I mean, there's a bunch of like history and lore into it, and it's all creepy. So,
yeah. Wow. Shoot, man. I'm making travel plans. Way too many travel plans. I'm actually, I'm going to be flying out to your neck of the woods in San Diego, not your neck, your old stomping ground, San Diego, here in a couple of weeks to do some interviews with people for my film. So, My wife is like, are you ever going to stop traveling? I'm like, that's kind of the job now, babe. I'm sorry. You know,
sounds like a great time, man. Is it really a job?
I try to sound like a responsible adult. So I still say I have a job, even though it feels like it's just a lot more fun than a job. So, you know, it's one of those things where I gotta make sure that I feel like I'm being a responsible adult. So we'll just call hunting monsters a job. That's what I do for a living.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. All right. So that was an interesting story, experiences that you've had. And I would like to transition into other things if you have time still.
Yeah, I've got plenty of time.
Well, that's for sure, buddy. I really hope you enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed it. And listen, friends, like I said in the beginning, I know it's a shorter episode, but that's because that story stood alone on its own, and I didn't want to spoil it with any other stories. Little did I know that we were going to get into a story in the overtime that was his actual first Skinwalker encounter. We didn't realize that when we were talking during this segment, but when he goes into the details of what happened on his grandparents' cattle ranch, it became clear to me that this was not his first encounter with a Skinwalker. He had a Skinwalker encounter years ago as a teenager, which kind of leads to his thought process when he told me that when you encounter a Skinwalker, if you survive the encounter, these things will follow you for the rest of your life, because it seems like that's happening for him. Let's get to the overtime. If you're a member, if you're not a member, I'll see you next week right here. And until then, stay safe, take care, and remember, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. Bye.
Please sit back and take a seat, relax, because you're about to hear an exclusive clip from the overtime.
So, okay, let's just say the unsaid here, because I mean, I was thinking it and you suggested it, that this calf could have been a Skinwalker.
Now, the cap and coyote, yeah.
Yeah, right, right, right. So, but what you're saying is you spent time close to a skinwalker.
I don't like hearing that verbally out loud because that's why I didn't say it, but I have no other explanation for what it was.
Bro, you tried feeding milk to a skinwalker. That's crazy.
Yeah, I've never really like put that together in my mind until right now, but like now that you like kind of verbalized it, it's kind of like a holy crap moment.
Blaze down a dirt road. Feel the heat of the night. Which way do I go?
I go.
He not a Lucy inside.
30 hours to you, dog. Out of pocket, a cute ball goes. Air a little bit thinner crossing the Rockies. Sounds in my head, luring me, ain't gotta be hurt. Desolation, mountains in the distant scene. Trouble seems to follow me, that's why I pack my name.